Nick Nyack from
Conference Record has joined the conference.
Okay, so I take recording. Well, let's just dive right in. And I'll count myself in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Hello and welcome to our first IBM CPO virtual roundtable presented in partnership with Ardent Partners. My name is Andrew Bartolini, Chief Research Officer at industry analyst firm Ardent Partners and publisher of the popular CPO Rising website, which focuses on topics that matter to CPOs and other procurement executives. I'll be today's host and roundtable moderator. Working in concert with IBM, this roundtable is the first of a three-part series where we bring together three or four best-in-class chief procurement officers and tackle a specific theme and get these industry-renowned experts to share their best ideas, strategies, and practices in what we expect will be a lively and interactive roundtable discussion conducted over the phone. Beyond today's roundtable, we invite all listeners to seek out the supporting materials that will be produced for each roundtable session and the entire series. These materials include interviews and profiles of the CPO participants, Ardent's written analysis of each roundtable, and a grand summary of the series. Visit IBM's website and our CPO Rising site for more information on all of these. Now, as I noted, the CPO Virtual Roundtable Series sponsor is IBM, and we also have the good fortune of getting one of their senior-most procurement leaders representing us on as a participant today as well. We could probably spend the entire roundtable describing the company and its breadth of services and solutions, but they just wanted me to quickly note that with the mTorrent acquisition 2 years ago, IBM is a world leader in providing strategic procurement solutions. IBM's offerings are solution-oriented with software, consulting services, process services, and operational best practices. Now, my firm, Ardent Partners, has partnered with IBM to bring you today's session. Ardent is a research and advisory firm laser-focused on defining and advancing the key strategies, processes, and technologies that drive operational excellence within global supply management operations. Our team has benchmarked thousands of distinct procurement operations across all aspects of their performance, and we produce research that organizations can use to improve their performance and make smart decisions. Okay, so that brings us to today's roundtable, which is focused on CPO collaboration to drive performance. And we're in for a real treat with a depth and breadth of experience found on our panel of CPO participants. Let me introduce you to them now. So let's start with Alicia Ralston. She's the Director, Global Sourcing and Procurement at Archer Daniels Midland Company. In this role, she oversees all ADM non-commodity purchasing functions and manages key supplier relationships. Ralston joined ADM in 1997 and has held a variety of auditing, accounting, and business development positions in the company's oil seeds and agricultural services business units. In 2010, she was named Director of Business Development for Ag Services, where she played a key role in strategic planning, capital expense forecasting, and merger and acquisition activity. Ralston holds a bachelor's degree in accounting from Milliken University in Decatur, Illinois. Alicia, welcome.
Thank you.
Next up, we've got Dr. Nick Nyack, Ph.D. Appointed as the fourth Chief Procurement Officer for the Department of Homeland Security, Dr. Nick Nyack oversees more than 1,400 contracting professionals, spending $18 billion to support 240,000 employees in the third largest federal department. The mission, to protect the United States of America. Dr. Nyack is a proven winner with 28 years of private, public, and academic leadership experience. The first in his family to be born in America, Dr. Nyack grew up working in several successful family businesses. His experience since then includes winning contracts for two private companies, creating the Treasury Acquisition Institute that has brought more than 100,000 contracting professionals in all three branches of government, serving as a senior executive at the highest levels of government, conceptualizing and leading several private ventures, teaching more than 45 business courses for four universities and winning more than 100 Washington metropolitan area amateur tennis tournaments. Interesting. Dr. Nyack has received the highest honors and recognition everywhere he has served and is most fulfilled by opportunities to help others succeed in life. He's actively involved in numerous service projects aimed at improving the lives of others. Nick, Welcome.
Thank you.
Next up, we've got Tom Linton, Chief Procurement and Supply Chain Officer at Flextronics International. Tom is the, as I just mentioned, the CPO and the Chief Supply Chain Officer for Flextronics, which is a $26 billion industry-leading Fortune Global 500 end-to-end supply chain solutions company with a global workforce of 200,000 and operations in over 30 countries. In the beginning of his career, Mr. Linton spent 20 years at IBM, developing and founding several worldwide trading and technical centers. After leaving IBM, Mr. Linton helped found E2Open, Inc., a supply chain software company. Mr. Linton also served as Chief Procurement Officer at Aguirre Systems, Freescale Semiconductor, and he most recently held the title of Executive Vice President and Chief Procurement Officer at LG Electronics. Currently, Mr. Linton serves as the Chairman of the Board for the Institute of Supply Management and serves on the World Economic Forum's Global Agenda Council for Logistics and Supply Chain. Mr. Linton is a graduate of the University of Vermont and has been a guest lecturer at MIT, which is one of 12 institutions of higher learning where he's served as a guest lecturer. Tom, thanks for joining today. Great. And we'll move on to Patrice Knight, Vice President, Global Procurement, IBM. Throughout her career at IBM, Ms. Knight has held a number of leadership positions within IBM's integrated supply chain and procurement organizations. In these roles, she has led transformation efforts that have transitioned IBM's internal operations from a cost center to a profit center for the corporation and enabled the success and profitability of the greater business strategy. She has achieved a reputation for being a thought leader and change agent in every aspect of the supply chain. She has led a variety of initiatives, both IT and process, to enable IBM's shared services to set the pace on delivering IBM's strategy of being recognized as the premier globally integrated enterprise. Ms. Knight was named to her current position, Vice President Global Supply Operations, in August 2006. And has responsibility for all supply operations, which includes procurement, policy and practices, supplier diversity, and supply transformation. Under her leadership, Global Supply has accelerated operating in global centers of excellence through common processes and tools. Her responsibility for procurement transformation spans end-to-end improvements and embraces Lean Six Sigma methodologies to deliver comprehensive, measurable benefits. As a member of the board of the National Minority Supplier Development Council and as chairman of the NMSDC International Committee, Ms. Knight is a recognized leader in successful development of global supplier diversity. From 1995 to 2002, Ms. Knight was a sourcing and supply demand expert in various electronic component categories and negotiated IBM's first long-term agreement for memory devices. She received her bachelor's degree from the State University of New York. She has completed graduate-level coursework in finance, supply chain management, and strategic sourcing. And so as you can see, we have welcome, Pat.
Thank you, Andrew.
Yeah, no, so it's a, you know, we've got a fantastic panel. I think we've got a fantastic agenda as well. You know, I've given a higher-level overview, this description, you know, provided your biographical backgrounds and the discussion there. What I'd like to do to really kick this off is if you could each just take a few minutes to provide a little bit of context around your role today, your organization and its mission and scope, and how it operates within your company and department. And Alicia, maybe if we could start with you.
Sure. Thank you, Andrew. Again, my name is Alicia Ralston. I'm the Director of Global Sourcing and Procurement for Archer Daniels Midland, also known as ADM to many. We're a Fortune 27 company, and I focus on the non-commodity spend here. So we're not procuring corn, beans, wheat, milo, any of those type of commodities. We have specialized traders who handle that. We are on more of the indirect spend, so the maintenance, repair, operational items, the corporate spend type of items, our packaging goods. Those are the areas that my team focuses on a global scale. We have about 61 colleagues on a global scale, a team in North America, South America, Europe, as well as in Asia. That's the team structure. As far as mission and goals, There's many things that we're working on. There's no shortage of priorities here at ADM. But what we really focus on right now is standardization and leverage of our size and scope. We also have some projects, as you may be aware, for some M&A integration, so our mergers and acquisitions integration, and how we capture synergies from those acquisitions quickly and efficiently. I would tell you that's also a big priority on our list. In addition to that, we're going through a transformation to a global ERP system. That's another priority that we have on our list for the short term that we hope to get additional benefits from. So those are the high-level goals and objectives that we have. We work very closely with our business units, both from an operational as well as a corporate perspective. We have teams of people and participate in strategy and growth plans with those senior-level executives here at ADM.
Great, great. Thanks, Alicia. Nick, let's turn to you and talk a little bit about the work at DHS.
Sure. Thank you, Andrew. Full disclosure, I just recently left DHS. I was the longest sitting chief procurement officer of 3 years and 9 months and was very fortunate to have a very good run there and look forward to helping them in a different capacity now that I'm on the outside and I've started my own consulting company. But from the DHS perspective in procurement, the way procurement looks is, and you mentioned there, 1,400 contracting folks, and they're spread out throughout the multiple agencies that are doing things to protect the country. So, for instance, the United States Coast Guard is an agency within Homeland Security protecting the waterways. We have procurement people there buying things to support the Coast Guard. Similarly, that is also the case at the Transportation Security Administration, Customs and Border Patrol, where we're doing things to protect the border, and I know we've heard a lot about that recently, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, United States Secret Service, and the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center, where we're training all federal law enforcement officers in the numerous agencies where there are federal law enforcement officers. So our procurement people are buying a variety of supplies and services, oftentimes absolute cutting edge. There's and then also oftentimes stuff that is off the shelf. The way procurement, the folks are sort of lined up with their customers, but they have a very strong dotted line relationship to the chief procurement officer. So I created a strategic plan, which had a very specific set of metrics around my priorities, and we carried that out over the last 3 years and 9 months. All of that, by the way, is available on the Internet for any taxpayer to see. So essentially overarching, our 1,400 contracting people on a daily basis buying things to protect the country, that's not good enough at the least cost to the American taxpayer, so we're doing a lot of things that other members on the panel are doing, like strategic sourcing. And then even that's not good enough while fulfilling public policy. In the public sector in procurement, a lot of things are legislated. When you're spending taxpayer dollars, there's more that you want to achieve than driving down cost and getting a good deal. There are just public policies that are not the least of which are, for instance, spreading the wealth to a variety of socioeconomic categories through small business. So buying things to protect the country at the least cost to the taxpayer while fulfilling public policy is what the 1,400 people, contracting folks, did and do while I was at Homeland Security.
Great. Nick, that's fantastic. Tom, let's turn to you.
Sure. Flextronics is a $26 billion company. We manage really supply chains for about 1,000 customers across the world. We have 14,000 active suppliers, and the dynamic that I manage really is all of the supply chain relationships with each one of those customers, each one of them having different requirements. Manage all the sourcing, both direct and indirect, which is about $21 billion, depending on the year, and all the logistics spend for the company, as well as all the materials management. All the materials management would involve, you know, all the inventory management and all the site level, you know, procure to pay order execution pieces. Also drive supply chain design and a lot of the structures that go into just managing that level of complexity. I sit in San Jose, California, but we're a Singapore registered company. I also have an office there as well, where I lived for 13 years. I've lived in Asia for 22 years, Japan, Korea, and Singapore. Although I sit in California, I kind of tend to think of things from that perspective, and in the electronics industry where I sit, understanding that is really, really critical. The other thing that's kind of interesting is lately we have been working very hard in, we just spun out a company we incubated called Elementum, which is working on cloud-based supply chain solutions. That coming from our experience with Workday and HR. And we're trying to develop next-generation predictive capabilities around supply chain and sourcing. And sitting in Silicon Valley and all the innovation that happens here, that kind of makes for an interesting side job as well. But that's just a quick overview.
Yeah, no, that's great. I'm sure they're tapping into your expertise on the practitioner side, on the software and the business development side. So that brings us to Pat Knight from IBM. Maybe take a few minutes and give us a little more context of your role and what you're doing today.
Sure, thanks. So maybe just a little bit of perspective around procurement at IBM. We have about $54 billion of spend. Our presence is in more than 100 countries. We have about 400,000 requisitioners, and we have about 3,000 people around the world that have a procurement hat on. Today, we're a highly centralized, highly compliant organization, but that is not the way we always were. Really, today, we have a globally integrated common process after a good decade of transformation. Transformation doesn't ever seem to end. The great thing about it is we have looked at every aspect of the procurement process, from influence and strategic sourcing all the way through transaction processing, and we've technology enabled it. And I think that allows us to really move from kind of at the tail end of the process to really being influential and having a seat at the table with our clients inside of the company that need our suppliers to provide goods and services. And really, you know, changed from a transaction-based organization to really one that, you know, adds speed and value to the process. One of the things that, you know, we look at and when we think about, you know, what procurement is today and what it will be in the future, we're spending a lot of time on collaboration with our suppliers. I personally lead a big play across our entire supply chain around social collaboration with both customers of IBM as well as suppliers of IBM. So thanks for the opportunity and look forward to having a great discussion today.
Great. So, I mean, you know, just quick back of the envelope, right, we've got, you know, a powerhouse roundtable with procurement executives that are representing, you know, probably close to 1 million employees total, and more than what I believe is about $50 billion in spend. So, and drawn from different industries and, you know, focused on different global areas. So, you know, this is going to be great to see the different perspectives now. And so, as I think everybody knows, and as I mentioned at the top, our main topic today is, you know, how do CPOs use collaboration to impact performance? And before we start to drill down into collaboration as a strategy or an approach, I'd like each of you to talk about procurement performance as you've defined it or as your organization defines it at your respective enterprises. You know, what are your organization's top priorities for this year? What have you prioritized from a performance standpoint? And then also discuss some things that you're measuring and how you're tracking it and who you're reporting out to. So maybe this time let's start with Nick. Why don't we start with you this time?
Yeah, sure. So when it comes to the agency itself, it's pretty simple. Homeland Security doing everything and anything to try to protect the country and bounce back from disaster. So there are plenty of metrics at the top level, so above procurement, and they're all debatable because the issues are extremely complex and multidimensional. When it comes into the procurement world, the way I was looking at it was essentially in the federal government, in order to procure, while I would love to automate as much as possible where it makes sense, you need people to do federal procurement, and there's just a ton to learn when you're in that particular arena, because there's actually regulation, and that regulation is thick as a milkshake. So one of the priorities was people. We had noticed we had 1,400 contracting folks, but 36% of that workforce was eligible to retire, and we had every reason to believe in the next couple, two, 3 years that they, based on the economy and some other factors, that people are going to walk out in droves. We also found that the entry-level folks with less than 5 years, 1 in 4 were jumping to the private sector. So priority number one, because most everything gets done by people, was to put something in place where we could try to get a pipeline established. And so we created an intern program have graduated and are running plenty of folks there. I'm very optimistic in the little bit of a longer run, because I think that the folks coming in today are just, I feel they're a lot smarter than a guy like me when I came up, just because of technology and the way people learn today and their access to information. So people was one of the highest priorities of mine. The second one was, what can you do to reduce cost, either internal cost or the cost of whatever it is we're buying. And so strategic sourcing, something we all tap into and I think are trying to expand as far as we possibly can. You strategically source lots of stuff, and then you get down to things that become very complicated to look at, where someone may believe that you can strategically source it, but when you actually do the analysis, sometimes you may only be able to strategically source a piece of whatever it is you're buying. But that was an area of focus for sure, and will always be. The other one that I heard another panelist mention was reduction of transactions. So, if you have a fixed number of people buying things, it would be better if they're more focused on the more complex transactions versus routine buys. And so we have actually movement afoot to try to make the buying transaction, streamline it, simpler, and actually put it in the hands of the customer and get it out of having to be processed through a procurement shop. The other two things I'll just mention are trying to figure out how to reduce program risk. In DHS and in government, you're not in business to award contracts. You award contracts to support programs that do things that you hope will achieve the mission of the agency. So, for instance, we award contracts to do things on the border to increase border security. And the contract itself is just one thing. The overall program management of many contractors in order to secure the border, I'm oversimplifying this, is another area of priority that we were trying to figure out. How much risk can you is tolerable, and what is success at the end of the day as it relates to contracting supporting the result of the increase in border security? And then the final thing would just be collaboration. And I would love to say we could do it like the private sector. Let's just say I was a little jealous because, managing supplier relationship is a lovely thing to do if you can do it. Because of federal rules, you really should be able to tap into the supplier base to try to get the latest and the greatest thing, especially now when everything's changing at the speed of light. And at the same time, two things make it very, very challenging, but it shouldn't prohibit us from continuing to try to do it. But one is the budgeting cycle of the federal government and the idea that you get money and you've got to spend that money by the end of the year. So you got that going on. But the other thing is you are not supposed to get too cozy with it. So if you have a contractor who's done extremely well, you know, in the private sector, you'd like to keep them. It would make sense. And in the federal government, you have to compete, and you have to constantly compete. And you cannot give anybody an unfair competitive advantage in those competitions. So collaboration means a slightly different thing in the public sector, but it is absolutely crucial in order to continue to have, in fact, some of the companies on the panel continue to be interested in connecting with the government. Last point I'll make is this. Anywhere you go in the country where you can see, and you can't always see it, DHS in action, doing things to protect the country, I guarantee you will see a DHS employee and you will see something that was procured. And I say that because procurement is so integral to protecting the country, that'd be number one, so it gets a seat at the highest levels at the table. And well, you got to have the private sector engaged because they're the ones who are supplying these things, they're helping us protect the country.
That's great, Nick. Nick, that's a great view from the public sector. Maybe let's turn to Tom and get at least one view from the private sector. Talk a little bit about your organization's top priorities, what you've got prioritized this year, maybe some of the things that you're measuring and tracking.
Well, one of the things that I think all of us do, and we kind of have to always recognize, is we spend other people's money. You know, and when you spend other people's money, they really care about how you do that. And so I think communication and having, you know, very strong models for actually communicating how effectively you're doing that, what your plans are, what your strategies are. We're actually focused right now on a lot of predictive ways of doing that. You know, everybody knows how to buy to some extent in their personal lives, but the difference between, you know, professional acquisition, not just at a category level, commodity level, or supplier level, but actually the integrated way by which you plan, forecast, and execute, I think is something that's really important. The thing that I've kind of learned over the last decade or so is the fact that having been chief procurement officer at a semiconductor company, which is a parts company or a software company or a OEM versus a contract manufacturing company, is that the victim we're usually a victim of friction in how either communications or materials and processes flow. And this whole idea of flow and actually looking for ways to eliminate friction all the way through the supply chain actually is really important. So we're focused more and more on velocity and visibility and how actually those two things actually do accelerate performance. And when you're dealing with a lot of material and a lot of inventory, you know, the velocity of your supply chain and the visibility of your supply chain and how you source that effectively around the world, you know, logistically manage it, is becoming increasingly important. So the whole notion of, you know, collaboration both internally and externally, I think is something that in procurement we have to be really, really religious about. We have to be really militant about, because if we're not, I think the forces that want to separate are greater than the forces that want to combine. So spend a lot of time on that and measure accordingly, measure performance along those lines. I believe very strongly that you have to not only measure, you know, your cost performance, but your collaborative abilities as a company and as down to the individual level. You know, most people have, at this point, I think somebody mentioned earlier, you know, professional capabilities, especially people who've come up through the profession, been certified, or got a degree in supply chain or procurement. You know, you have a different group of people than maybe we had 20 years ago. So actually being able to guide them and drive that, you know, toward a future state is really, I think, very important in 2014 and beyond.
Oh, that's great, Tom. Pat, why don't we turn to you and IBM and to look at performance and priorities and what your organization and you personally are focused on in 2014.
Great, yeah. You know, I think a procurement organization always looks as a kind of right of entry to be efficient and effective. That means, you know, you are responsible, as Tom said, to spend the company's money wisely or the entity's money wisely and to get value for money. And one of the things that we've evolved to beyond just, you know, a savings engine is, you know, are we really bringing innovation and value early enough into the process so that each of our business units can be competitive and have access to, you know, the most advanced supplier innovation, and are we engaging, you know, all the way through the process early enough? So we have kind of very traditional metrics, which is kind of the health metrics of the organization, and then we have these leading metrics, which talk about engagement, talk about influence, talk about innovation, and then, you know, as an organization, we continue to focus on the use of analytics so that not only are we looking at what we've done, but we're really in this predictive, cognitive space, and, you know, in many of the cases, you know, having the ability to do great contracts and to be proactive as a procurement organization to strategically source and have those vendor relationships, are you really putting it in front of the business unit, the part of the company that needs it, and, you know, are you helping them with speed to in fact, be able to deliver on their business results? And to the extent that the innovation across the enterprise really allows you to kind of bring what suppliers have to offer and, in fact, enhance every aspect of what you deliver as a business. So we, you know, we would say we have traditional metrics and then we have leading-edge metrics. And those leading-edge metrics are much more focused on risk management, supply chain social responsibility, and then this whole area of engagement and influence.
Great, fantastic. Alicia, so let's turn to you, right? So ADM, Fortune 50 company, you know, procurement operations and your focus. Talk a little bit about some of the priorities you have this year and, you know, when you think about performance, what you're focused on driving and measuring.
Sure. I guess I would start off agreeing first with Pat on the number one goal of any procurement organization, any sourcing organization, is to save the company money. We have to validate our existence, and that's generally what we're here to do. So we are lucky enough that our procurement organization, there's been enough faith and support behind it that we had our first externally communicated savings target in combination with our operational excellence team to the investment community and what procurement was going to provide to ADM in terms of savings to continue to produce returns for the company. So that was a really exciting and transformational effort for us where there's visibility into what we're doing. So obviously there's a great deal of collaboration with our internal stakeholders that, you know, the pipeline was full. We had the projects, the categories that were going to lead to the kind of savings that we were communicating. But also that there was a way to track it for our external auditors to validate it as well and to communicate that out. So there's a lot of different teams that you work with, you know, when you have a goal like that and it's communicated in that fashion. I would tell you our second biggest objective for the year is to manage the risk of supply. Many of the things that we touch are chemical inputs into our processing facilities. You know, a perfect example, just this summer we had a really tight hydrochloric acid market where we had to have strong collaboration between the local purchasing agents in conjunction with our transportation assets as well as our suppliers and what their pipeline looked like to strategize how do we get what we need, where we need it to make sure we're not shutting down a plant. So aside from saving the company money, we also have to mitigate risk in not running our plants out of a critical supply of a chemical or input that takes our processing plants down. In addition, we're working pretty heavily on growth projects, not just our mergers and acquisitions, but also the organic growth where ADM is going and building additional plants, more infrastructure, and how we're sourcing that to leverage large one-time buys against what our current sourcing contracts are. That's a big piece of what we're doing, as well as we have a pretty healthy budget for growth here at ADM on a global scale, and then leveraging that scale, you know, worldwide. So that's challenging and it's fun. The other thing that we're doing is working with our inventory control to manage our inventories better. You know, the whole supply chain, end-to-end supply chain, making sure that we're not ordering and keeping too much inventory. I think there's probably some point in everyone's career we've crossed hoarders, and so we're not unique in that regard either. And there's no need to have 64 gallons of milk at home because we know someday we're going to drink it, right? So that's some of what we have to work with, and showing the integrity of our supply chain that we can get them what they need when they need it to manage our working capital better. I think Nick hit it on the head when he was talking about people management and preparing for a lot of retirements. In my group, I'm going to lose 10% of my staff this year. I've had 3 retirements already, and I have a few more coming before the end of the year. So I'm already starting to see this exit of the professional workplace for some of our baby boomers, particularly here in the United States. So that's one thing that I'm trying to work on very heavily and focus on for people development is this pipeline. I know you mentioned intern programs, trainee programs. We're also looking at cross-training within ADM, so taking an engineer out of the plant and putting them in sourcing and procurement to understand our tools and the levers that we pull to do our jobs effectively, but then putting them back into another position, you know, back out in the plant and being better for the experience, having a rotational type of program. So those are some of the bigger goals. We're also working, as I mentioned, on an ERP. We started that process about a year ago. Hopefully we wrap the majority of that work up very, very quickly, where we can start to see the benefits of that. But that's high-level goals. You know, metrics, you know, we all have the same kind of metrics where we're measuring PO to PO savings. We're looking at acquisition cost differential when we leverage a big one-time buy versus everyday acquisition price. So those are some of the things that we look at as far as metrics. And I don't know if I'm lucky or unlucky, but mine gets externally communicated to the street. So I have a broader audience I have to satisfy.
Right, right. So that does sound challenging, but also fun, as you said. So, you know, from our perspective, right, at Arden, right, the speed and complexity of business continues to accelerate, and that really forces procurement executives to adapt to new market conditions and to react to new opportunities while still maintaining discipline and efficiency. You know, rising from this has been the importance of collaboration as a top CPO strategy to drive value and results. And in fact, in our own recent research study conducted earlier this year of more than 270 procurement executives, collaboration was identified as the top strategy used by CPOs in their departments to drive results and expand their influence. So in this section of the roundtable, we're going to look at the different kinds of collaboration and going to point a question to each of you to begin, and I certainly welcome the others to join in or maybe ask follow-on questions and become much more conversational. And so I'm going to start off by looking at team collaboration, and so this one's for Nick. Nick, you've had a fantastic career in public procurement, but when you joined the Department of Homeland Security, I mean, this was public procurement on an entirely new level based on DHS's size and unique mission. So I'd like to talk about the strategies that you employed to organize and drive performance across that large group of contracting professionals drawn from 7 different agencies, right, 1,400 professionals. How important has collaboration been among all of the procurement and contracting groups and the professionals? And talk about some of those strategies and how you were able to impact performance.
Yeah, happy to do it. So 3 years and 9 months ago, when I came to Homeland Security and recognized that the 1,400 contracting folks. And then, by the way, if I back up and just address collaboration from kind of a broader perspective, and I'm sure it's the same for all the members on the panel, and Alicia just mentioned she has a broader audience to respond to. When I think of collaboration, the first thing I thought of when I went to Homeland Security is who are all the stakeholders? You know, who cares about all this stuff that we're buying to protect the country? And in the case of Homeland Security in particular, being one of, you know, many government agencies, it's like everybody in the kitchen sink who cares about what we're buying. And kind of from a top level, I mean, you basically have got the White House cares, the Senate cares, the House of Representatives cares. There are these other entities that are constantly overseeing you, the General Accountability Office. You've got an Inspector General. And then you actually get to the folks that you typically collaborate with, which are employees, customers, and your supplier base. So the way I attacked it was I essentially brought all of the heads of contracting. So there were 9 contracting organizations that had the 1,400 contracting folks under them. I was told that the chief procurement officer had never communicated directly with the 1,400 employees. So what I did was I brought the 9 together, worked through creating a strategic plan that had my priorities. Collectively, we all endorsed it. Priorities, initiatives, and metrics. I told everybody that, I created it. I let them shoot holes in it. And then finally, everyone endorsed it with their signature and their picture in it. I told everybody that we would issue an annual progress report, basically saying 2 things. Here's how we did, and then getting together and tweaking the metrics and the initiatives moving forward in the next year. We issued 2 of those in my 3 years there, and I electronically sent that directly to the 1,400 employees. The other thing I did was I would hand every head of contracting a goal and priority letter that they would sign and that I would sign, and that also went to their bosses, so that I ensured that these metrics were moving in the right direction. We'd have a mid-year checkpoint, and then at the end of the year, I would give them performance feedback on how they did. The last thing I'll mention in bringing it all together was recognizing people. So I visited every one of the 1,400 who were located throughout the United States and yearly recognized them for things that they did in moving the metrics in the right direction with my own personal recognition, and that went over fairly well. So collaborated to create a strategic plan because essentially I needed to say, how is this place any better from year to year since I got here? In order to do that, collaboration was absolutely key. And in leaving, I told and shared with everybody how grateful I was for all of the collaboration. And I think when you collaborate, it creates a sense of togetherness, and I certainly enjoyed that for almost 4 years.
Right. So getting, you know, the collaboration gets people vested in, you know, gets their skin in the game, as it were. Maybe I'll just open up to any of the other 3 who maybe are coming at it from a slightly different perspective as it relates to your own teams, simply from the standpoint that, you know, if your team is centralized and reporting up to you, you are that final authority. But thinking more broadly, look at some of the things that you've done to get your staff invested in the projects and priorities that you have as leaders of procurement organizations and as the larger enterprise has. Anyone want to take a shot at that?
This is Alicia. I'll take a stab at this one. There's a couple of things that we've done, and you know, some of what Nick is talking about is what I call accountability and having them invested in the process. It's not just your name or your reputation on the line, but it's all of them as well. In my office, we have a whiteboard, and we have projects that we're going to execute, you know, each month of the year or each quarter, like I said, to establish this pipeline. So, you know, not only have they committed to me what they're going to accomplish, but then it's easier for me to go and commit to, you know, to my bosses, to the executive leadership team, and say, this is what we're going to do, and this is who's going to do it and what time frame it's going to get done. And And then when we actually have that success, and it's kind of a ceremonial type of thing where you get to take it off the board, it's executed, you met your deliverables, you met your objectives, and they get to have the celebration. But I think, like any of us, when your stakeholders are coming back to you time after time, you know, we call that repeat business, because they need our help, or they have the impression that we can do it better than they can, which is huge. That's a huge win for us. I think that is part of the recognition that keeps them motivated. But also this externally communicated goal, when our CEO and our president and COO of ADM talking on the quarterly conference calls to Wall Street about what the procurement organization is going to do, that's powerful. I mean, it's in the earnings call. It's a bullet point on a slide deck going to the investment community. And then taking the time, me personally taking the time in our monthly global staff meeting to review what that means and how important and impactful that is, I think that's what makes the difference. They see their success. They see the need. It's not a nice to have. It becomes a need that the organization needs us performing every single day. And I think that recognition, Nick, you used that word, and I thought it was perfect, the recognition that they're adding value each and every day that they walk in here and perform makes the difference. So I would tell you that's maybe how we're looking at it and what we're trying to do from a recognition and driving continued positive performance here.
Great, great. So now let's look at collaboration with budget holders, right? So Tom, you mentioned, right, as part of the description of what you do, is, right, you're spending other people's money. You're also one of the most recognized CPOs in the world today, and as we've noted, vast international experience and proven approaches. You know, I know in the past you've taken what at least I consider to be a very progressive approach to category management, and so I'm very interested to hear you talk about some of the strategies that you're using to get your team engaged with different budget holders to increase influence and you know, impact results and help them manage their money.
Thank you, Andrew. It's interesting. You know, the whole role of procurement is a strong influence in the investor community. I mean, for the last 2 years, you know, I've been a lead keynote speaker at our investor conference, you know, with the people who own stock in our company, and I think it's a reflection of the fact that people know now that a company's success is not just about revenue growth, but it's about how effectively it generates cash and how effectively it actually produces profitability through effective cost management. So I think that's important. Now, the one thing I wanted to mention is really, and Pat will know this, but, you know, I kind of took this out of a playbook that a guy named Gene Richter did back in the early 1990s in IBM, was that, you know, you have to make, as a CPO, you have to make a bet. You know, you have to walk in and say, look, I have enough confidence in the professional capabilities of my people and of what professional procurement is to know that we're going to take X percent out of this in the next 12 months or next 24 months and use that as a lever to actually either get resources, to get budget, to get what you need in order to provide the air cover to go do it. And I've done that on a number of occasions where I've said, look, I think there's 8 to 10% we can take out if I have this many people focused on these areas. If given the budget to do it, kind of a business case bet. I think that's something really important that CPOs can learn, because oftentimes, you know, we tend to be conservative and reactive to whatever we're asked to do rather than actually sticking our necks out and say, look, you let me go do this and I'll save you this. And that really comes from a deeper belief kind of in our capabilities as a profession and understanding what that can deliver. You know, when
right.
you centralize, when you consolidate, when you have good commodity and category strategies, when you have good people doing it, coming from the perspective of good people doing good things make good things happen. So that I think is really important.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Maybe others want to comment, right? So, you know, if the average procurement organization has about 60% of their spend under management, getting engaged with or getting embedded with the business and the different budget holders, very, very critical to expanding that influence and really driving more value. Anyone else want to talk about some of the strategies they've employed?
I'll mention a couple of things that we've done that kind of support a lot of the comments that Tom just made. You know, one of the things that we found early on is making, you know, those bold commitments and really kind of putting out there what you think is possible. But I'd even take it one step further. You know, one of the things that we've learned is you have to actually embed yourself into those groups in your organization, those stakeholders, those lines of business, because they are probably less inclined to figure out what procurement means to them. Instead, what they want is they want you to understand their plan, their revenue, their profit, and they want you to take and navigate the entire procurement organization and show them where that value could be captured, what, you know, things they would have to do differently. And, you know, we've had some unique roles in the organization where, you know, they're much more client relationship oriented because it's less important about them understanding how to use procurement than us mobilizing every aspect of category that helps the business unit. So we've become advocates into the lines of business where, you know, we understand their operating plan, we understand their revenue plan, we understand their profit plans, and at extremely opportune times, we're able to bring ideas of innovation and really make it collaborative into the businesses. I think that allows you to actually take procurement even to the next level.
Right. No, that's great. Nick, did you want to go ahead?
I'd like to just, you know, pile on a little bit to what Tom and Pat said. You know, we had just a few weeks ago, we had our 5-year strategy planning session. So we're sitting in with the BU president, and they're listening to our pitch and how we're going to plug ourselves into their strategy over the 5 years and, you know, what the growth walk looks like, things like that. And there isn't a better feeling as a CPO or director, whatever your title is, but there isn't a better feeling that when somebody sees the value in what you can provide, they're asking questions, how do you accelerate this? And then my boss is the COO and president. They're asking my boss, what can he do to help me get more resources to execute that plan faster, because that's what they need. So, you know, I think Pat and Tom both, you know, when you make a bet and you show them that, you know, there's some credibility in what you're telling them you're going to do, and you could do more if you had X resources to come to your team, it's a brilliant thing when other people are fighting and lobbying for you to get more resources on your team. So I agree wholeheartedly with what both of them said in my own experience.
Great. And so, Alicia, let's stay here with you. Right. So ADM, you know, it's another unique and huge organization, Fortune 50 firm, 30,000 plus employees, 270 plus processing plants and operations in 140 countries. You know, your background at ADM didn't begin in procurement. You were actually tapped to lead your team, or ADM executives made a bet on you, because you'd established credibility in other executive roles within ADM. So tell us about the importance of your earlier experience and exposure to other executives and, you know, if and how that's made it easier for you to build your organization. And then talk a little bit about how collaboration with functional groups like IT and finance and maybe they're also, you know, budget holders, but in their functional roles, how you've partnered with those groups or HR and how has that made an impact on procurement performance and enterprise performance that, as you've noted, is reported out quarterly to the street?
Yeah, sure. I would tell you probably about 6 months into this job, you know, you're looking at different systems where you're trying to pull your information from, understand your spend, who the players are, what categories are most critical, you're prioritizing. And when you can't get your arms around your information, the IT group becomes your first best friend because they're the ones that can map all of the data for you. They can put it into nice, concise reporting formats to start working on actual factual-based information. I would tell you that credibility, you know, you used that word earlier, credibility is probably what got me here into this position, and maintaining my credibility is what has kept me in the position as well. Having a finance and accounting background, you know what pieces of information exist somewhere in the company, and you know where you can start start diving into the details of pain points for your internal stakeholders. So collaborating with the IT people to get the information that I know existed from a finance and accounting perspective, though at some point in my past I knew it was there, trying to pull that out and establishing a plan based off of factual-based information allows that natural credibility to happen because you're fighting fights with facts. You know, you're going to a person and saying, look, you have this supplier that you're using in your facility. It's not a contracted vendor. If you would buy the same exact piece, part, you know, equipment from our contracted vendor, this is the amount of money that you would be saving. Or we could, you know, earn a rebate of X at the end of the year if we could consolidate these purchases. Or we could leverage our size and scale on, you know, every continent except for yours. If you get on board, we would have even more purchasing power. And when you're able to sit down, you know, with what I call the information technology folks and say, this is what I need out of these different systems around the globe, and I need it to be consistent. I need it to be the same time frame. I need it to be representative of what's really there. And they're able to go and get that information for you, and then you have your finance team validate it, whether it's plant operating cost or SG&A, whatever that is. When you have a finance team sitting there and a CFO validating what you are saying, the buy-in is a lot easier. It also helps to have what I would call repeat performance, where we can get information quickly, take action faster, because we understand the supply chain, for example. If we have a good collaborative relationship with our rail logistics group and our truck logistics group, we can get freight rates back on deliveries, and we can make better decisions faster in the supply chain world, knowing and having those people be our partners. Now, obviously, with a team as small as mine, we can't do all of those jobs, so it's absolutely critical that we work with the transportation and logistics, we work with the finance team, that we work with the IT teams as well. So the collaboration, it's easier when you have existing relationships, which is what I had coming into this role. I'd been around for a while and was able to tap into the people I knew and have a familiar face asking for something, but then also having the ability to explain why it was important and how it was going to help. It works. It works. And it's critical. If you don't have that, you don't have the ability to have those relationships, the collaborative relationships where you can turn information around fast, you're gonna get caught quickly without being able to be proactive instead of reactive.
Great. That's great. And so, you know, what we're going to do is I'm going to turn it to the final question, and it's collaboration with that other group, right? It's external collaboration with suppliers, which is only, you know, from our perspective, going to increase in importance is companies no longer competing directly or simply against other companies, but it really is supply chains competing against supply chains. And so maybe Pat, we'll start with you. From Gene Richter, who Tom also mentioned, to John Patterson, to Pat Knight, IBM has long been viewed as one of the leading procurement and supply management operations. Whether it was being very early in to establish procurement centers in emerging regions like China or Africa, or leveraging its expertise in your own supply management software, IBM has been a leader when it comes to supplier management. So, take a few minutes and tell us about a few of the collaborative strategies that IBM has employed with its suppliers and talk about some of the results. And then I'll open that up to everybody else.
I think we've talked a lot about various aspects of collaboration, and maybe it's time to spend a little bit of time about supplier collaboration. And I'll tell you, I think it's a real characteristic of leading-edge organizations, ones who are able to tap into that innovation with their suppliers. I think one of the greatest values you can have is to have that supplier relationship that allows you easy and fast access to innovation, and you bring that forward into your business. When I think about the use of technology and the way you engage with people, I think there's a lot of technical enablement that can help you here. And one of the great examples is you take any
complex category. You know, our largest category of spend is labor. Well, probably the most significant amount of innovation has come by having those great relationships with our suppliers and really bringing them into what I'm going to call the horizontal process that sits inside the IBM Corporation. It's not just about procurement. It's about the lines of business. It's about HR. And some of the greatest innovation you can get is actually from your suppliers, because they can look across the organization. And what we found is to have that ability, one, to tap in and to create an expectation that part of the relationship you have with those suppliers is not just, you know, to negotiate price, but it's to buy smarter, to look across the end-to-end commerce engine and say, how can we do this with less steps? How can we do this with more efficiency, more effectiveness? How can we look and be predictive about what we're going to buy tomorrow as opposed to renegotiating what we just buy today? I think that whole area of innovation can really change the dynamic of speed and value. Getting access to that information and thinking about really that area of engagement in all types of collaboration. I think, you know, oftentimes, just like, you know, customers decide who they're going to do business with, I think suppliers choose to do business with certain companies, and the ones that give them access to technology roadmaps, give them access to, you know, really the business problems, that's where you're going to get that differentiator.
Great, great. And anyone else care to comment? Sort of collaboration with suppliers and its importance. Okay, well, maybe I'll just wrap it up and let it bring us to the conclusion of today's CPO virtual roundtable. I'd like to thank our panelists, Pat Knight, Tom Linton, Dr. Nick Nyack, and Alicia Ralston. I'd also like to thank our sponsor, IBM, and I invite and welcome all listeners to visit the IBM site to find out more about this series and also find out more about their services and solutions. So this is Andrew Bartolini, Chief Research Officer at Arden Partners. Thanks for listening. Thanks for attending. Thanks for participating. I think this is a fantastic discussion of four clear leaders in the space and an industry with, you know, managing, you know, $50 billion in aggregate spend and impacting hundreds of thousands of their employees and their customers. So once again, thanks everybody, and we'll be back in the fall with number two in this series.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. I'm not sure if they've stopped recording, but I'm sure they can edit it out.